Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today I'm joined by literary agent Claire Conville of Conville & Walsh, who is going to guide us through three new releases. On our bookshelf today are two works of fiction, The Death of an Owl by Paul Tordet and Hot Milk by Deborah Levy, and one non-fiction book by Ben Wilson called Heyday, Britain and the Birth of the Modern World, which shines a light on the explosive decade of the 1850s. That's all to come here on The Arts Review on Monocle 24. Stay tuned. We're going to start with The Death of an Owl, a novel that was started by Paul Tordet and finished after his death by his son Piers. The work centres on Charles Frian and his social set from his days at Oxford University. It deals with a number of themes, including the nature of power, the price of ambition, and the inner workings of the political machine. Welcome to the show, Claire. I mean, first off, tell us where we start and how the plot develops from there.
I chose this book because it's, I think, a one-off that a father and son, who are both writers, father, very sadly, Paul, very sadly, died a couple of years ago, and I think it's a unique place to be, to actually pick up your father's work and take it forward. I mean, the book opens, you know, maybe 20, 25 years ago, and it's very much inspired by Anthony Powell's Dance to Music of Time sequence. And it's about two friends, one who becomes a very, very ambitious politician and the other who becomes a strategist. And it's about the death of an owl, and our ambitious politician kills an owl by mistake, and there follows a big cover-up which leads eventually to his downfall. But it's a power, as you say, it's always interesting, corruption is ever present, and this book explores these themes in, I think, a very involving and compelling and immersive way. And I think what really I found thrilling about the book was that Piers took over to write the last third of the book. He is best known for his children's trilogy, The Last Wild, which won a Guardian Prize. And so he brings his own themes to the story that his father started. Where the two bits of the novel meet is seamless. I defy anyone to notice where he picks up where his father left off. I mean, it's beautifully, beautifully done. But he also makes it his own book with his own preoccupations. And that's what I find so astounding about this work.
It's fascinating. I mean, did Paul have a bit of a plan set down that Piers has gone with?
There was very little. I think after Paul's death, sometime after his death, even everyone agreed that Piers should finish the novel. Then they found some notes which showed that, in fact, that had been Paul's intention all along. But there wasn't a sort of grand plan, you know. It was a manuscript. It was 2/3 of the way through. So Piers really had to sort of both pick up on his father's themes and to a certain extent his father's style of writing, which is very different from his because he's primarily a writer for children. But as I say, make this book his own, and he does it magnificently. And it's very funny. It's very dark as Andrew, our ambitious politician, sort of descends into sort of essentially madness. His fall from grace is brilliantly plotted and brilliantly kind of understood, if you like.
I was going to ask about the humour, because I guess the event that kicks off the drama is incredibly kind of bathetic. You know, it's the death of an owl, as the title suggests. I mean, what is the sort of sense of humour of this book?
Well, it's not laugh out loud. I think when you're reading it, it's that there's a dryness and real insight, actually, into the world of these people, which feels very entitled. They feel rather kind of arrogant. They feel they can do anything. They can take anyone for a ride. And gradually their worlds begin to disintegrate. But it is this very, as you say, pathetic idea of this small event, which suddenly kind of builds and builds. And the more you hide a secret, the bigger it becomes. And it actually, weirdly, it reminds me of sort of, you know, Lady Macbeth with the sort of trying to wash her hands, having murdered King Duncan. You know, the truth will out. You know, there are greater powers at work beyond sort of individual action. And there's something remorseless about this book as the truth is revealed and people actually meet their rather terrible fates, actually. So you feel that both Paul and Piers both have insider knowledge of this world, but are also pleased to see it unravel.
Finally, I mean, is there, do you think, a sort of strong and clear party political message here, or is it more just an investigation of...
No, it's not a party political book. It is just about how power corrupts and power destroys. But I would say that the ending is, I didn't see it coming. It's utterly brilliant because it's totally within the theme set up by Paul in the first half of the book. But as I say, Pierce makes it entirely his own with his personal preoccupations about ecology and landscape, which were the themes of The Last Wild. So I found it a remarkably, as I say, immersive and interesting and unusual book. And as I say, with this sort of extraordinary feature that it's a father and son writing.
The Death of an Owl is out on the 14th of April and is published by Orion Books. The next book on our reading list is the non-fiction work by Ben Wilson entitled Heyday, Britain and the Birth of the Modern World. In this work, Wilson focuses on one single decade, the 1850s, and claims that this was the critical decade that reshaped Britain and gave birth to the modern world. Claire, what grabbed you about this book?
Well, I have to admit that I represent Ben, so I follow his career with a particular interest. But he's an extraordinary historian. I think his first book was published when he was a sort of unbelievable 22. And he's written, this is his fifth book. He's still unbelievably young. But what he does, which I think is unparalleled, he has extraordinary grasp of the micro and the macro. So you can take the smallest detail and sort of shape a fantastic story, which is part of a bigger history. And he's covering a lot of ground in this book, and yet you never feel it's rushed or it's superficial or it's hurried. He takes you all around the world. It's one of the most exciting periods of certainly Western history. I think native populations didn't fare so well in this period.
Right.
But it is never anything less than entirely engrossing and interesting and often very funny.
Right. What makes the 1850s so special?
Well, one, of course, it was when Origin of the Species was published. And of course, I think that's a seminal turning point in all our lives, and which continues to resonate down the decades. But really, the first thing that happened was that there was a laying of an electric cable between England and France across the Channel. That was at the beginning of the 1950s. And then in 1958, they laid a cable from Ireland, I think, to Boston. And that was a kind of moment of transformation, because it was suddenly the world could start communicating with each other. And I think, you know, commentators, people like Thomas Hardy, were saying, well, you know, it's an extraordinary moment in history. Time has collapsed, you know. If you think about now, you think about how quickly we communicate, how events, money, everything goes around the world at the speed of light. You know, until 1858, you were writing letters, you were, you know, that was the only thing you could do. You couldn't pick up a phone and talk to anyone. You couldn't send a cable. You couldn't, you know, there was just a myriad of things you just couldn't do. So it was partly that transformation. It was partly massive sort of movement of and colonization in America, in India, technological advancement, the birth of the newspapers. So suddenly news could kind of go around the world. And a kind of incredible pioneering spirit. And, of course, you know, on a yearly basis, economies were growing by 500%. You know, it was an extraordinary period of financial and economic growth. So all these things combined to make an extraordinary period. And I think the other thing Ben argues is that at the beginning of the 1950s, Britain was the dominant kind of Western culture and kind of empire. By the end of the 1850s, America was suddenly kind of kicking into gear and becoming this, you know, extraordinary superpower that we now know it to be.
Heyday is published by W&N and is out now. Our final book today is Hot Milk by Deborah Levy, whose novel Swimming Home was shortlisted for the Man Booker in 2012. Hot Milk revolves around the relationship between the 25-year-old narrator Sophia and her mother Rose. The pair have travelled from Britain to Andalusia in an attempt to cure the 64-year-old Rose of several obscure ailments that her doctors cannot find a reason for. Claire, where does this story go from there?
Well, Deborah Levy, I'm a huge fan of her work. I've followed her work since her first novel, many years ago now. Deborah is not necessarily a chronological writer in a traditional sense. So, I mean, this is a book about many things. It's about relationships between mothers and daughters. It's about the blurred lines of sexuality. It's about control. It's about a dying Europe. You know, the book opens with Sophia being stung by a large jellyfish in the sea, just out where they're staying in Spain, and these jellyfish are called Medusas. But Medusa is a huge theme through the novel, and she represents sexuality, she represents madness, she represents control. And there's a very interesting moment where Sophia, in the course of the book, has a relationship with first a woman and then a man. And the woman makes her a jumper and sews the word she thinks beloved into it. But a little further down the line, she looks at it again. It says beheaded. So, as I say, there's no straight chronological narrative. It's exploring lots of themes. The language is loose, very fluent. I've interviewed Deborah, and I know that water, the sea, are incredibly important, powerful elements in her work. And she sort of surfaces, and I said, when I talked to her, I said, you know, sometimes I feel that you're in that sort of liminal space between conscious and unconscious thinking and feeling. She said, yes, it's exactly that. I'm sort of surfing that space all the time between what's happening above and below consciousness. So it's a very compelling book, but it's a strange book. It's not a traditional holiday read. But for anyone who's a mother, anyone who's a daughter, I found it absolutely engrossing.
I mean, I guess the engine of the entire novel is this relationship between Sophia and her mother. I mean, how would you describe that relationship, and what is it?
Well, it's very complicated, as often mother-daughter relationships are. And, you know, on one hand, Sophia's there trying to help her mother. On the other hand, maybe she's hindering her. Who's controlling who? The mother is ostensibly unwell, but perhaps that's just massive hypochondria. Their relationship is quite scratchy and quite kind of codependent, you know. It's not a sort of lovey-dovey, let's all go shopping and have a lovey. You know, it's quite kind of gritty, let's put it like that.
You mentioned that Deborah Levy's been, obviously, she was shortlisted for the Man Booker in 2012. Do you think her style is sort of, would you describe it as highly literary, or is this a relatively easy read?
It's modern, I'd say. I mean, I think she's definitely in the tradition of Virginia Woolf, Catherine Mansfield, the fellow writer called Kirsty Gunn, who I think they have a lot in common. She's not bothered by complicated plot. That's not what she does. You know, the writing flows fluently. It's often in present time. It's very sensual, I think. You know, you feel the heat, you feel the light, you feel the sort of the presence of the elements. It's very unmale, let's put it like that. You know, she's not wandering around kind of worrying about what it's like to be middle-aged. You know, it's not. She's doing something very, very, very different, I think.
And she quite likes these sort of Mediterranean settings, doesn't
yes.
she?
She's I think going back to the water theme, I think it allows, you know, that is something that just appears again and again and again in her work. And I think everything, you know, she's always proximate to water.
Right.
I noticed that in her writing.
You mentioned liminality as kind of one of her key themes, and I guess being on the coast is a part of that in setting as well.
But also the water is not lovely. You know, it's filled with Medusas. It's not like going back to sort of the womb, or it's not a lovely, soothing place to be. It's kind of hot and salty and dangerous and, you know, as I say, Sophia is stung in the first few pages of the book quite badly by the Medusa jellyfish.
Hot Milk by Deborah Levy is published by Penguin in Canada and is out now. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Claire Conville for joining me in the studio. Claire is curating the Curious Arts Festival, which takes place between the 22nd and 24th of July at Pilewell Park in the UK. Do take a look. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when Anna Smith will have the lowdown on the week's film releases. Until then, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.